Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We're going to be talking about a number of things today. But number one, we're going to be talking about debt, which I promised you last week. And number two, we're going to talk about how that ties into the preposterous comment that Lester Holt incorrectly made at the beginning of the Clinton-Trump debate. On the 26th, he began by saying, oh, median family income has risen more than it has in many years, and everybody's making more money now, and blah, 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 blah. Absolutely, positively, friggin' wrong. Wrong. And we're going to be talking about debt, which Trump does talk about, although not as he should, in my opinion. And which Hillary Clinton avoids like the plague. I don't know if you noticed that. I mean, she didn't want to engage in the discussion about national debt or any other kind of debt whatsoever. And then we're going to be talking about, and I think you'll find this rather amusing, we're going to be talking about all Trump's missed opportunities in this debate. You know, it's not that he performed poorly, although I was not impressed by his performance. It's that he regrettably missed a chance to put this election away. He had 10 or 15 openings where he could have KO'd her, knocked her out, won the election. Had he taken advantage of all of them, he could have won the election, perhaps not in a landslide, but convincingly. And instead, he got twisted up in his egocentric wanderings, his defenses of himself and his companies, his defenses of his policies, and I don't mean his policies relative to the United States or his plans for the United States. I mean his policies as to how he treated women and the birther thing and the whole nine yards. Now, did Hillary Clinton cleverly read his personality and bait him? Yes, she did. Did she have aid and comfort from Lester Holt? Absolutely. The questions were one-sided to both candidates. Birther questions to Trump. No questions about the server to Hillary. Listen, Lester Holt is from NBC, okay? And he's kind of like Comey. We were hearing about how Comey was fair and how he was above board and how he was the most honest guy in Washington during the Clinton email and server investigation. And we have come to find out, as I have always suspected and as I told you, that irrelevant. The investigation was not fair. The investigation was not thorough. The investigation was clearly for public consumption and intended to never have an outcome to indict Hillary or any of her top aides as a revelation over the last week of the immunity given to her five top aides, one of the guys who bleached all her stuff on her server 4 days after getting an order from Congress and a subpoena, an order to preserve, which means do not destroy anything. Everything is evidence. We want it. Blah, blah, blah. Not only did he wipe it out, he used that BleachBit software, which I think it was Comey. I'm not really sure. It doesn't matter. That said, God himself couldn't read again. Maybe it was Trey Gowdy. So, you know, just as everybody was jumping up and down, all the media talking heads about how Comey was effective and he was fair and he'd get to the bottom of this nonsense. Absolute crap. Okay, he was purposely ineffective. Fair never entered into the equation, and the investigation The so-called investigation began with an intent to not investigate. That's number one. Number two, Lester holds the same type of dog and pony show. Everybody in the media was talking about how he's a great journalist, and he'll be even-handed, and he'll be above board. Look, Lester Holt works for NBC. Okay? NBC is an ultra-liberal deal. That's the way it is. For people to think anything else, they're just insane. And Trump missed some opportunities to put him in his place early on in this debate and kind of set the tempo. And because he didn't do it, Lester Holt, I forget what the exact stats were, Lester Holt interrupted him 51 times and interrupted Hillary 7. Lester Holt threw questions to him which have nothing to do with the three supposed topics selected by Lester Holt, national security, national prosperity, etc., like the birther question. Tell me what the birther question has to do with anything having to do with national security or national prosperity. Please, give me a break. So the whole thing, and then, you know, Trump aided and abetted both of them. So where he could have taken even Lester's, should we say, less than even-handed performance and moderation, and Hillary's sly digs at him with her smug little countenance, which Brett Hume called unattractive. And, you know, Britt, I know you're getting a lot of crap from the left wing of the country because they want to take your word unattractive, meaning it didn't appeal to people, and they want to twist it into you calling her ugly. Let me tell you, you're a gentleman. I'm not going to be a big gentleman. Hillary Clinton was disgusting. The smug look on her face, her chin lifted in the air, not only did it remind me of Obama, it made me want to puke. Now, obviously I'm no fan of Hillary Clinton's, but there was nothing personal about her whatsoever. I thought she was disgusting. Now, having said that, she certainly had better command of the facts, and she controlled, other than the first half hour, the debate. And that is Donald Trump's fault, 100%. Not Hillary's, because that's her job. Not Lester's, because we know where his sympathies lie. It's Trump's. And he had so many openings that she gave him, that Lester gave him, that he didn't take advantage of because he was off down some wormhole, extolling either his own virtues or defending what he considers to be his own virtues, that he lost sight of the big picture. That's concerning on a number of levels, but I'm not going to go there right now. It's particularly concerning because he had a chance to put this election away. We are 40 days out, and he didn't do it. And I'm going to give you some examples. And I'm going to clip part of this show, and I'm going to send it with a letter to the Trump campaign. And I guess they can take it, leave it, laugh at it, whatever. But I think that these types of responses would have absolutely slam-dunked Hillary, slam-dunked Lester, won the debate, and won the election. So we're going to be getting into that. It weaves in perfectly with the other topics I wanted to cover tonight, because the other topics I wanted to cover tonight were all kind of part and parcel of this supposed debate, which was more like a debacle, in my opinion. So, let's start off, keeping with the theme of the debate, let's start off with how Lester Holt opens the debate. He starts off with the first question to Trump, and he begins with a preface, a statement of so-called fact, that recent reports show household income has risen more than any time in a number of years, and people are making more money. Well, let me tell you, as with all government statistics, and you have heard me wailing about this, I mean, type in the search bar, unemployment, realstatistics.com, any phrase you want, and you will come up with at least a dozen shows, particularly over the last 2 years, with me jumping up and down about how the government is lying to you. The government lies to you about everything. Everything. It lied to you about the Hillary Clinton investigation. It lied to you about the Iran deal. And by it, I'm talking about Barack Obama and the progressives who run this country, along with Hillary Clinton, who is one of them. It lied to you about the Iran deal. It lied to you about Al-Qaeda. It lies to you about terror every time there's a terror incident. It lies to you about race relations. It lies to you about GDP. It lies to you about the economy. It lies to you about debt. It just flat lies. That's what it does. Because the government has become so removed from the people and so big as to be completely out of control. It is a self-feeding animal. And all us ants can't be told the truth because it will interfere with the feeding frenzy that it is engaged in of itself. So, on these income numbers, let me set this straight. And you know, Trump could have started right here. He could have said, Lester, I don't know where you get your numbers, but if they're from the government, they can't be trusted. Because the real numbers, Lester, are when you're going from below zero, which is where income has been since, like, the year 2000, any increase is a huge increase. And so the increase that you're touting as being the best in years is the best in years because it started off so poorly. It's the same, Lester, as Barack Obama increasing the federal deficit to $1.4 trillion and then reducing it to $700 billion, which is $250 billion more than the biggest deficit George Bush ever ran, and trying to tell us that he's getting the debt down because he had the deficit. You increase something to 100 from zero and then decrease it to 50 and then slap yourself on the back for cutting it in half. Now, that's what he could have said to Lester, which would have put Lester in his place, probably changed the tempo of the debate, and certainly set Trump up for the economic third, if you want to call it that, of the debate, which he didn't do bad at. I'm going to give you some numbers, though. Let me digress from the debate just a minute, because this is important that you understand this. You know, I was also going to be talking about globalism, by the way, tonight. I talked about it last week. And folks, I want you to understand, I'm not going to get to globalism tonight because I'm kind of hyped up on these subjects. I'm going to move that to next week, and I'm going to go into it in detail. It's a show you really, really, really want to hear because it's something you really, really, really need to understand. But what I am talking about tonight with the government lying to us, with Barack Obama in his interview, I believe it was Thursday, his town hall on Clinton News Network, CNN, where he spent 4 minutes lollygagging, meandering without his teleprompter about why he doesn't call radical Islam radical Islam. You know, because he said he doesn't want to give it credit. By associating it with Islam. Well, you know, I hate to tell you, but the Islamic State, he calls it ISIL, we've gone over that in previous shows, the Islamic State is the Islamic State. They chose that name for a reason. It's not to legitimize themselves. They don't need legitimacy. It's because they're waging jihad, which is a holy war called for by the Quran. Read it. It's in the book. Against non-believers or infidels. And Barack Obama, as I have said many, many, many times, put it in the search bar. Muslim sympathizer at the best. At the best, folks. At the best. He is, in fact, the commander-in-chief of the radical Islamic forces on the planet, either wittingly or unwittingly, and my bet is wittingly and deviously. Type in the search bar, if you have a chance, a show I did about a year, year and a half ago. And it was titled The Unholy Alliance Between the Left and Radical Islam. And I will tell you why he is their proponent, not their enemy. It goes back to his worldview, which goes back to globalism. Hillary Clinton is a globalist. Barack Obama is a globalist. Donald Trump is a nationalist. The gentleman who just took over as prime minister in England is a nationalist. The Brexit vote was a nationalist vote, a vote against globalism. European Union is a globalistic organization. The United Nations is a globalistic organization. The United States of America is a nation with its own sovereignty, which is the antithesis and the enemy of the globalists. When you begin to understand that, you begin to understand how all the rest of this arises. Because words do matter. I was watching an interview of Dr. Gorky, a rather brilliant guy who's radically anti-Islamic radicalism. And I forget which show he was on. But he mentioned, and it caught my attention, that one of his students at the Military Sciences College that he is dean of said in a dissertation that if the enemy controls the words you use to describe them, you have already lost the war. Words, in fact, do matter. They do matter. And you know what? Information matters and truth matters. And words are an element and, in fact, drive information and truth, do they not? I have often said on this show, if you control words, you control message. If you control message, you control thoughts. If you control thoughts, you control perceptions. And if you control perceptions, you can control movement. It is absolutely, positively true. You saw it in the debate on a microcosmic scale. But let's come back to this income thing that all the progressives and globalists are loving to tout, that Hillary Clinton beats her chest on, although she had nothing to do even with this lie. Whatever good news there might be in this lie, she had nothing to do with. So what Lester was saying is that income jumped dramatically, the most in many, many years. Well, this is a report from the Census Bureau that he was quoting, okay? And I'm going off some research. I want to give the guy his due, by Rodney Johnson. He's a senior editor for Economy and Markets. So the Census Bureau reported that median income jumped 5.2% last year, which is more than any increase since 1999. Now, that is what Lester was basing his comments on. However, let's look behind that number, kind of like when we look behind the so-called unemployment number that our government lies about to us every month. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, when it comes to unemployment numbers, we've talked about this. They don't count people who have dropped out of the workforce. They interpolate births and deaths. They do all sorts of things to manipulate these numbers downwards, more so in a political year, which certainly this is. Okay. However, when they come out with a figure, just coincidentally, of course, a few months before the election, that median income has jumped more than 1999, 5.2%, here's what they don't tell you. They don't tell you that they're double counting income from previous years. Okay? They don't tell you that they changed their basis of calculations like they did long ago for unemployment, which pumped incomes more than 3% higher than in previous income estimates of the same study. which accounts, by the way, for what? 60% of the 5.2% increase right there. And what they want to say, they want to say that the median family income jumped from $51,900, I'm rounding numbers, to $53,500. Well, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors, folks. And Trump should have known this. He didn't have to go into this kind of detail. He can't do that in debate. But he should have put Lester in his place and used it as a springboard for an attack against Hillary. Just, it is a springboard. It's a diving board he missed in his headlong jump into the pool, just like the others we're going to go over today. Using the old methodology, okay, this is before they changed it right before this report. The Census Bureau reported, I'm going to read to you, that 1 million people received income from a retirement account, and that income totaled $18 billion, a part of their overall equation. With the new approach, these numbers jumped to 5.2 million people and $60 billion in income. Now, look, let's be really fair here. Let's bend over backwards to be fair. The bottom line is, there probably is a hell of a lot more people taking money out of their retirement accounts than a million people. So I'm not going to doubt their numbers on that. We'll give the devil their due. However, here's where they really screwed the pooch on these percentages to pump them up, to lie to you, to make it look good, to set up the debate, number one, and number two, set up the election. They are double counting this retirement income. In other words, they have counted the income that someone earned who has a retirement account when they got it before it went into the retirement account. And now, with their new formula, they are counting it when they take it out of their retirement account. In other words, they are double counting the same dollar of income. You earned it, let's say, in 2010 and put it in your retirement account, and you took it out in 2016, and they're counting it again as income. Do you understand? The bottom line is they double-fudged the income numbers to arrive at both the income numbers and the increase. And it's going to get worse because more and more people are retiring and more people, therefore, will be taking money out of retirement accounts. So, excuse me. So you're going to see, mark my words, a steady stream over the next year or whatever, unless Trump gets elected. And then they won't do it. You'll see a steady stream of this report going up and up and up, and you being fed a bunch of crap about how your income's going up when you know damn well it isn't. So that's number one. Number two, debt. Okay, Trump raised this several times, you know, more debt than the other 43 presidents in front of him, and doubled the debt and all this kind of stuff, but he didn't quantify it for people. And he could have gone into more detail, particularly when Hillary Clinton was talking about her economic plan. I mean, she gave him every opening in the world to jump in and say, you know, I mean, he tried to say it. He said, we're $20 trillion in debt and we don't have new roads. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. So he tried to get it out, but it was inarticulate. It was not fathomable, I don't think, to the average listener. But let me give you some startling statistics before I get into some fun stuff that Trump really could have done to Hillary, which I think you'll agree with 100%. In fact, you'll clap your hands when you hear it, and which I'm going to send to the Trump campaign. So let me explain debt to you, and I have done many shows on this. You can type it in the search bar, public and private debt. National debt, unfunded liability debt. Any one of those will bring up a host of shows and interviews with national figures. But where we sit today, right now, today, as I do this show for you, we have slightly over $19.5 trillion in federal debt. We have another $3 trillion in state and local debt. We have $41.4 trillion in private debt, $35.3 trillion in Medicaid, that's an unfunded liability, debt, $22.8 trillion in Medicare, another unfunded liability debt, and $8 trillion in Social Security, another unfunded liability debt. By the way, that doesn't include pension liabilities of municipalities, unions, companies, states, and the federal government. What I just rattled off to you is $130 trillion in debt and didn't even include it all. That is something that Trump could have raised, I believe. Now, what's even worse is that in the Western economies, there's a growing debt-to-GDP ratio. When I say growing debt-to-GDP ratio, what I mean is debt is increasing as a ratio of GDP, that is gross domestic output, the economy, how well a country is doing, how much stuff you sell, in virtually the entire Western world, being led by several countries. By the way, we're one of them. But let me give you these statistics because it is absolutely stupendous. Stupendous. In Ireland, the debt to GDP ratio is 1,085%. 1,085%. 10 to 1, actually almost 11 to 1, debt to GDP. In the United Kingdom, our friend Britain, who just got out of the EU, congrats to them. See how well this is done, how well the EU has done for our buddies. 877%. 877% debt to GDP. Germany, who supposedly, according to the press and all the talking heads, is the strongest economy in Europe and one of the world's most stable countries and blah, 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 blah. Never mind, they're overrun by 1.5 million Muslims. Andrea Merkel is as bad as Barack Obama as a sympathizer, and I can go on and on. Germany, this so-called bulwark of European stability and prosperity, 676%. 6.7 times debt to GDP. Wow. France, 923%. Spain, who, by the way, is one of the most wobbly countries, 646%. Portugal, another wobbly. Remember the pigs? Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. Portugal, 931%. Italy, 699%. And then, of course, we have Greece. You remember all the headlines on them. At 1,196%, 12 times debt to every one time of production, of output, of economy. Wow. Unbelievable. And where does the United States rank in all this, do you ask? 707%, folks. That's 707%. There are $7 of debt for every dollar of economic output in the United States. Do you think we have a problem? Do you understand why Hillary Clinton doesn't want to talk about this? And do you understand why Donald Trump should use every opportunity to not only talk about it, but to talk about it? You can't get into the weeds, but with slightly more details. I mean, how about jumping down Lester Holt's throat right there at the beginning after he polished him off with just a couple of tidbits of information on median household income and the manipulation of those statistics? How about jumping down Lester Holt's throat and saying, what are you talking about, Lester? The debt to GDP ratio, and then look into the camera, the amount of money that we owe related to what we produce or do is 7 to 1, Lester. 707%, to be exact. That would have caught people's attention. That's not a statistic that the mainstream media or the economic media tell you about. And how effective would it have been with 100 million people watching? Pretty damn effective. Now, look. When I was talking about these ratios, this is the country as a whole, right? This is the government, the private sector, the quasi-private sector, the what they call the NGO, non-government organizations, all that kind of stuff. But what's really unbelievable is that the banks in all these countries, and by the way, right now, Germany being number one, Deutsche Bank is close to going under. And their second bank, their second largest bank, is also on the verge of default. You're going to hear more and more about this in the next month. You keep your eyes, you keep your ears peeled. And I wouldn't put it above Barack Obama to secretly slip Germany money to try and keep them afloat till the election. Progressives will do anything to maintain and expand their power, including using your tax money. I think you know that already. Okay, but non-performing bank loans in Italy have risen just this year to 18%. Productivity in Italy has fallen to 13%. And its GDP per capita, that is, how much GDP per person does the country generate? You know, how much an economic output for each citizen of the country does it generate? Has dropped 12%. Okay, Greece. Their non-performing loans at the Greek banks are 34% of their entire loan portfolio. Ireland, 19%. Portugal, 12%. Actually, startlingly low figure given Portugal's economic plight. Spain, 7%. Also, amazingly low. Deutsche Bank in Germany just lost $7 billion. In fact, that $7 billion loss was in the third quarter. A quarter. $7 billion loss. And they got slapped with a $14 billion judgment from the United States Department of Justice. I mean, can you imagine the irony for bad trade practices or whatever it was? It doesn't really matter. It's another huge liability. They're trying to sell assets to the German government. Nobody's reporting to you about this. The German government is putting together emergency plans to try and rescue them. I mean, this is a big friggin' mess. I reported to you 2 years ago. I was one of the very first to report to you. In fact, 3 years ago. And if you type in the search bar, Greece is California, I did a show, and I talked about what was happening in Europe, and I compared it to what's happening in California, which, by the way, has also dropped off a fiscal cliff, particularly with Jerry Brown at the helm, and with illegal immigration, and affording all sorts of social benefits to illegal immigrants through sanctuary cities, welfare, Obamacare, you name it. But that's a whole other story. Europe is in serious trouble. I've been telling you folks for 2 years, maybe 3 years. And the chickens are coming home to roost. You keep your eyes on this. I don't know if they're going to be able to band-aid over this in the next 40 days. I think they're going to do everything in their power to try and keep the German banks afloat so the economic wreck that would attend their cratering is not till after the election, but I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. You keep your ears to the track, as I like to say on my Facebook pages. Deutsche Bank, the stock has plummeted 90% since 2008. 98%. Earnings drop. 98% earnings drop. Commerzbank, Germany's second largest bank. Remember, I'm picking these two out, not only because they are arguably in the most trouble of any of the big banks, and there's a bunch of them in trouble, but because these are the two largest banks and supposedly the most stable and prosperous country in the European Union. Commerzbank, which is Germany's number two bank, their earnings are down 97%. In Italy, UniCredit and Bank of Courage, their two largest banks, are down 94% and 99%. HSBC in the UK lost 15% of their value and their profits. Royal Bank of Scotland, 40%. Barclays, 41%. Okay, these are huge, huge numbers. And not only do you need to know these facts, I mean, they're kind of wonkish. These are not all numbers that you can bring up in a debate. But what I'm trying to emphasize is the opening that Lester Baby gave Trump in the very first 30 seconds of that debate, which Trump could have just jumped down his throat on and set the tone for the whole debate and put Hillary on the defensive at the same time. Then, of course, we have the famous cybersecurity portion of the debate. Now, you know, I don't even need to tell you about this, right? I mean, Lester goes, well, what can we do to improve cybersecurity? And Hillary Clinton, with that smug little look, talks about more of this and more of that, and I'm very concerned. And you know what Donald Trump should have said? Donald Trump should have jumped right in there and said, well, I think the first thing, there's many things we can do, which I'll get into in a moment, but the very first thing that we ought to do is we ought to make sure that we enforce our espionage and classified document laws. And anybody who breaks those laws, knowingly or unknowingly, needs to be indicted and go to jail. And he should have just looked at Hillary and not said a word, just looked at her. Wow, would that have been powerful? That would have been, you know, it would have been one of those one-liners that would have been in debate history, kind of like the Reagan zingers, right? And then then Lester was bringing up, and the candidates brought up regulations. And Trump had the perfect opportunity. Hillary Clinton said, well, you know, I want to look at what regulations make sense. And Trump should have looked at her and said, you mean like the regulation you supported that the EPA wanted to put into effect, controlling the nation's water? So what you're saying, Hillary, is that you're in favor of the EPA being able to fine every single homeowner watching this debate for the runoff that comes off their roof, which is what that regulation said, and left it at that. I mean, everybody, all 100 million people would have gotten it. They would have had the picture of the rain dribbling off their gutters into their driveway and the EPA out there with the winky winkies coming to cuff them. Okay, then they talked about jobs. Okay, first of all, I just went over that. You know, wrong stats. The median was the median claim was nonsense. You know, the deficits were... Trump hit him, but he didn't hit him hard enough and he didn't tie Hillary in. And the other thing, the other opening that he had there when Hillary was talking about jobs and how concerned she was, another one-liner. Think about this. He should have turned to her and said, well, you know, if you're that concerned about jobs and Obamacare has cost us 11 million full-time jobs and replaced them with 7 million part-time jobs, how come you're still in favor of Obamacare? Boom! And if she had taken the bait, he could have gone one step further and talked about how Obamacare is on its last legs, how premiums have gone up, even though she and Obama and everybody who else was behind it promised they'd go down by $2,500. Instead, they've gone up $3,000 to $4,000, depending upon the state, and how there's five states right now you can't even get an insurance policy through Obamacare because there's no exchange left. And there's 20 states now, including Wyoming, by the way, where there's one insurer left. One insurer. Who can charge whatever the hell they want, and they do, and they will. What a beautiful opening. He could have cracked a whole bunch of nuts with that one. And then, do you remember when she said, well, I have a lot of stamina. I was in front of the House committee for 11 hours. You know what the perfect comeback would have been? Another one-liner. Well, those poor boys on the Benghazi rooftop who died, they were up there for 13 hours. And if she had taken the bait, could have ripped her a new butthole on Benghazi and the lies and the changing of the uniforms and the fact she wasn't in the Situation Room until after 10 o'clock at night, that famous, I'm here to take your 3 a.m. telephone call. I mean, just that one sentence could have just wiped her out. And I don't think she would have gone there. It would have just hung in the air. It would have been another historical debate moment that people would be watching 40 years from now, like they watch Reagan's moments. You know, there you go again, and I won't hold your youthful blah, blah, blah against you. And then we were talking about criminal reform. Remember that whole part of the debate? And Hillary Clinton with her chin in the air and her little nose, she smugly says, well, I've been working for criminal reform for 24 years or whatever the hell she said. Never mind how many holes you can punch in that, because this is a debate. And what you're doing is you're trying to score points with voters. Okay, this is not a Harvard debate where you get points on every detail and all that crap. This is for much higher stakes. This is a battle for the sound bites. And you know what the perfect Trump soundbite would have been? And he blew all these opportunities. Blew them all. The perfect Trump comeback on that would have been, well, Hillary, let me ask you a question. Does your crime reform plan, does that begin with some alteration in the criminal justice system for our espionage laws and the handling of classified documents? Because the laws are on the books, but you haven't been prosecuted. So I guess that must be part of your criminal justice reform. I mean, you know, you could word it more artfully than I just did, but I think you get the gist. I mean, a huge one-line zinger. And what is she going to say? I mean, what is she going to say, right? Wow. Then they were talking about taxes, okay? And, you know, Trump made his point. He made his point well, but he didn't explain it. Number one, he didn't use it as a sword against her, and he had several one-line zinger opportunities to do it. And number two, he didn't explain it well to, you know, the average person who was watching the debate, who literally, it was kind of their first involvement in politics all year. I mean, let's face it, Americans are not paying it. Many Americans are still not paying attention. But she was talking about how taxes, if you remember this part of the debate, how he dodged taxes, right? How he didn't, the only two returns they've gotten, he hasn't paid any income tax. And, you know, Trump took the bait and he went down the wormhole and talked about his taxes and his statements and all this kind of stuff. He didn't have to do any of that. All he should have said was, listen, my financial disclosures are down at wherever they're archived. And there are 101 pages, and they'll tell you everything you want to know. And I made $646 million last year. And then he should have turned her and said, and that's right, I didn't pay any taxes on it. You know why I didn't pay any taxes on it, Hillary? Because I do what you have never done. I take all that money, and I reinvest it in my business. And I hire people. And I build things. And when I build things, that gives me depreciation and other expenses under the tax code, which, by the way, I'd like to change so it's not so generous to people like me and you. And that's why I don't pay taxes. Instead, I employ tens of thousands of people. Because if I paid taxes, I couldn't employ tens of thousands of people, Hillary. And the money would go to the government and be squandered. It'd go to Iran on your Iran deal. You know, it'd go to bombophones, whatever he wants to say. I mean, you get the gist. He could have turned the whole thing around as a huge positive. Lemons to lemonade, right? Sal's ear to a silk purse. And what the hell is she going to say? That she's employed tens and tens of thousands of people? And if she wanted to, if she took the bait and went down the wormhole, he could have pounded the hell out of her with another one-line zinger. Hillary, I take my deductions through my business, which employs people and creates goods and services and opportunities. You take your tax deductions because you made 50-odd million, whatever the number is, last year, through your so-called tax-free foundation, which exists for two things: to put money in yours and Bill's pocket, to pay your expenses, and to write off your 7 million of travel and your 5 million of dining and your whatever million of, you know, new clothes as a expense against your taxes, which are the same as the foundation's taxes, because the foundation is really you and Bill, which you've used for your own pay-to-play scheme while you were in the State Department and at other times. Once again, I'm not trying to polish the exact, but I think you see where he could have nailed her to the wall, and she would have been the one stuttering and on the defensive. Okay, then you have, the whole women thing. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, at the very end, and of course we have found out that this was all, that the articles which came out like the next day had been written for 3 or 4 days before the, so this is all a concerted mainstream, left-wing media, shoulder-to-shoulder with progressives, i.e. Hillary's campaign, to discredit Trump. Now, I'm not going to go down the wormhole of all the nasty things Hillary Clinton has done to women, her war room, her bimbo room, you know, whatever. Or the fact that Hillary Clinton caring about anybody, much less women, is an oxymoron. She cares about her wallet. That's what she cares about. And actually, that's not a bad line. You don't care about women, you care about your wallet. Anyway. Trump took the bait entirely, and he's still taking the bait, unfortunately, a day or two after the deal. It's irrelevant. This is not something that's going to, in my opinion, determine a whole lot of votes either way. And if I were Trump, I might even take the bull by the horns and say, you know what? Yeah, I've said that in the past. And so have 50 million other men. And so have 50 million other women. Because I don't think anybody can tell me that women don't sit around and say that guy has a nice butt. Or that guy's a fat slob. Or that guy ought to cut his hair. Or that guy has too much nose hair. Or that guy ought to trim his ears. Now come on. This is human nature. We are humans. This is what goes on. There's no disrespect intended. It's just the way it is. Or something along those lines. I mean, own it, turn it against her, and make it common sense so that the common man who is his supporter and the common woman who is his supporter can be swayed. All right, look, we could go on and on and on about the debate. I think I've given you some incredible statistics here. It's, number one, some background on these absolute BS government lies about the rise in median income. I mean, it's just total crap. Total crap. And number two, about the real state of debt in the Western world, including the United States. And number three, tied that into all these missed opportunities. I gave you just a few that Trump had to put this election away. Can you imagine how this debate would have gone had he done half of the one-line zingers with some practice and polish, obviously. They can be better than what, how I enunciated them. At the appropriate time in this debate, this election would have been over, folks. He would have been leading Hillary by 5 to 8 points in every swing state and probably by 10 to 12 points nationally, and he didn't do it. And I just hope that he does it, and he does it quickly. Not only in the next debates, but each and every day out on the campaign trail. You know, and there's certain things you can do on the campaign trail, and there's certain things you don't want to do on the campaign trail because you want to save them as zingers for the next debate when, unfortunately, not 100 million people, but maybe 70 million people will be watching. Anyway, as you can tell, I'm disappointed in his performance. I am pleased that Hillary Clinton came off, as Brit Hume would say, so unattractively. And like I said, I think he was kind. And I still think Trump is going to win, but I think he increased the tilt of the hill he has to climb by not putting her away in that first debate, which had a format, and this is important, a format which was the most conducive of the three debates to back and forth and getting in these one-line zingers. And I hope to hell he has his surrogates do whatever he wants to do to his little heart's content on Hillary's treatment of women and whatever, because it doesn't matter, okay? That's not what people want to hear about. And I certainly hope he never again takes the bait, which unfortunately he took hook, line, and sinker on a dozen occasions and got waylaid from these one-line zingers that could have won him the debate in the election, that he doesn't get diverted into his own egotistical rabbit hole because he'll lose. And if he loses for all of us. All of us deplorables, you know. And from one deplorable to the other, I'm going to bid you adieu for this show. Next week, we will do what I had originally planned to do had I not been so hyped up on this debate stuff and so intent on bringing you these facts and figures which you need to know on global debt and so-called rise in median income. Next week, we are going to do the globalism show, and it's a corker, and you will understand, unfortunately, in frightening clarity, what is really at stake in this election, and what the game out there on the world court really is. As just another little teaser, I gave you several last week and then, of course, didn't produce because we had other topics this week. But as a little teaser, did you know that the United Nations, that favorite bastard child of globalists, voted this week, I'm not making this up, that the United States should pay reparations for its slavery back 150 years ago. Remember I told you about those three words, reparations, retribution, and redistribution, as being Barry's favorite words, and Hillary's too, by the way. Well, keep that in mind. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a safe week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.